Hi folks, a little bit of housekeeping before we start this podcast. This is a conversation we had last week with Dr. Joe Murphy-Lawless, and I'm not shy in saying that is one of the best podcasts I've done, and I've done over 1,000. So please, please do give it a listen. Please support this work. We need you to go to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Join us for the price of a fancy cup of coffee or a cheap pint nowadays, once a month, and it keeps us going, keeps us ad-free, and you get to listen to these podcasts without me begging at the beginning. You get, as soon as we can turn them around, in there you'll have conversations from earlier this week on Lebanon with Hannah McCarthy. You will have heard from Catu in Limerick on what's the housing crisis, rental crisis is like there. And there's over 900 all consolidated in one feed, so you don't miss a thing. That's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Really appreciate if you could help us. It makes all the difference. Genuinely, this podcast, this platform, it doesn't exist without you putting your hands in your pockets and keeping us going. Thanks so much for the support, and do listen to this. It's a powerful, powerful 1 hour tour de force. Thank you. Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and it's been a strange few weeks, and I'm using that word strange inappropriately in terms of the long history of strange dealings of how we treat pregnant people in this country for decades, and if not Martin, since the foundation of the state, it's been like this for a long, long time.
Even before that, Tony, we inherited a lot of the problems from our last rulers, but our current rulers haven't fixed a lot of them.
Well, I know we will get into the meat of this subject now, but I do want to talk about some of that, because a lot of this thing is they're talking about at the moment in the National Maternity Hospital is about a future of better care. And people are, you know, forget about the past, don't worry about that. And I keep pointing to the, well, actually, even in the present, things are not so good. You know, we've got 2,811 children in emergency accommodation. 3,000 children have gone through that situation since the beginning of the year. These are predominantly single parents, which is then again predominantly women again. And this is part of a structural violence, we phrase it as, in this country. Joining us to talk about how this has been ongoing in our health service well beyond the recent controversy, and I'm thrilled to say, as we've told listeners, we would come back on the topic is Dr. Joe Murphy-Lawless, who is the research fellow in NUI Galway at the Centre of Health Evaluation. Thank you so much, Dr. Murphy-Lawless, for joining us.
I thank you so much for giving me the chance to be able to talk about these issues. It is deeply appreciated.
No, it's, look, we Your son, who is no stranger to this podcast, regularly contributes a few moments, and obviously he made the connection for us recently, and we were discussing this. But you've done literally decades of work in terms of maternal obstetrics and how people are treated, women are treated, pregnant people are treated in this country. Can you just, if you wouldn't mind, outline the context of the work that you've done? And I know, you know, I'm not asking you to go through the entire history of it. But if you could give us a few minutes of, so listeners will understand the context. I think it's important before we get into the meat of it that we do, so we know what you've been witnessing and how you've been documenting and the work that's gone in.
Thank you very much for that. I will just say about that poor child known as my son, that when he was, I think, in fifth class, he wrote an essay on women dying of puerperal fever in the maternity hospitals, in the lying-in wards. This goes back a long, long way, this history. Now, you will say I was persecuting my son as well, which is also true, but he lived with it. He picked it up. He picked it up very, very early on. And he picked up very early on as well. An aspect of this, which I regret to say, is not there and part of the contemporary discourse, even within these last few weeks, over the so-called National Maternity Hospital. And I will come back to that issue at the end if you wish, which is about the power base. Oshin picked up very early on, if you want to really understand what our history is in this one, you might read some Foucault. And you might pay heed to the 2005 definition of reproductive justice, which is not a term we use often in this country. Why, I do not know, because it is there. There's an international movement. People have really got to get with this definition. the complete physical, mental, spiritual, political, economic, and social well-being of women and girls that will be achieved when women and girls have the economic, social, and political power and resources to make healthy decisions about our bodies, sexuality, and reproduction for ourselves, our families, and our communities in all areas of our lives. Hey, guess what we don't have in Ireland? Do you want to go over some of the broader scandals that are just in your lifetimes, not in my lifetime, in your lifetimes? So we can look at NERI in Our Lady of Lourdes. We can look at the Hep C scandal. We can look at the symphysiotomy scandal. We can look at cervical cancer. That's only four. And let me tell you, those four alone have cost this state hundreds of millions of pounds, of euros, pounds when it was punts, euros, the compensation, but the suffering for women entailed in even those four is phenomenal and disgraceful and rare and almost never owned up to. So where do you want to go from there?
Does money,
I got to lose my temper.
Does money make a difference, Doc? Does money make a difference in that they get fined, but does that change anything? Or is it they're playing with house money so they don't care?
They're playing with house money, they don't care. And they don't get fined. Let me tell you, the state pays out, but the state does not discipline, and the state does not monitor, and the state does not produce any exacting surveillance over services which are unaccountable and are made unaccountable by groups of powerful individuals. And I'll cite them, the senior professional obstetric corps, senior echelons of the HSE, senior echelons in hospital management groups, the Department of Health. And I can tell you, the general public has no idea how these services are being run. But in respect of money, shall we read from Foucault? Modern medicine is individual because it has worked its way into market relations. Modern medicine is linked to a capitalist economy. It is an individual or individualistic medicine amenable only to the market relation, joining the doctor to the patient, and it is impervious to a global collective dimension of society. So that will do for starters.
That's very good. What can we do? How do we do anything about this, Doctor? If they don't care, if the money makes no difference, if it's bad management and generations, I mean, hundreds of years of bad management, how do we get to solve the problem?
I think one of the central issues when you look at the Irish maternity services is the problem of, I regret to say, of patriarchy and male hierarchy. And it's absolutely there at the centre, at the core of it. If you look at the NHS in Britain, and it has huge problems now, and it itself is moving towards a marketized basis, as we know, and much of what has made the NHS worthwhile has been pretty well destroyed. However, even there, when the NHS was established in that post-war period, there was finally a kind of parity, so that if you had a team of people working with one another, with a woman who is pregnant, she becomes pregnant, she goes to her GP, she would be referred in Britain, perhaps to go to her local midwife straight off, a community midwife. That midwife would see her through, she would go back and forth as needed between a GP. If she needed to go to hospital in her pregnancy, yes. Otherwise, the community midwife would be there for her, and the community midwife would probably be there when she gave birth to her baby, be it in hospital, be it in a birthing unit, be it in at home, indeed. If you look at the organisation of the maternity services of our nearest neighbours, I'm taking Northern Ireland and Scotland, they are evidence-based insofar as that is possible in these harsh times. They are working with the evidence. They have, for example, in Northern Ireland, 8 alongside birthing units. They have 17 of those in Scotland. They have consistent review documentation. That consistent review documentation pays attention to the evidence. It is not subject, women in Northern Ireland and in Scotland are not subject to the same cabal that we have down here.
Dr. Morfilosa, come in, you refer to the cabal.
Yep.
So in broad terms, we talk about the power structures. And this is one of the things, we will get to the National Maternity Hospital, but one of the things about the people who are sort of in charge behind the people who are in charge. So you've, the, you know, you've the HSE, you've HICWA, you've these internal investigations, things that you've been railing against. Can you explain, you know, to us what are these interest parties? You know, it goes by from the state down, and how is that, is how does that, as you phrased it, cabal operate?
Okay. We have a structure of maternity services at present. We have 19 maternity units in this country. There are six of them, or is it six? We have the three Dublin major hospitals, the Rotunda, the Coombe, and Hollow Street, known as the National Maternity Hospital. I will come back to that problem of nomenclature. We have Cork University Maternity Hospital. We have Limerick University Maternity Hospital. So five of the 19 are established full maternity hospitals. The other 14 are maternity units in general hospitals. You will know from our health services, we've had ongoing chaos in our health services, in the organisation of our health services for many, many decades. The whole business setting up the HSE was meant to bring an end to that chaos, because we'd somehow or another formalise relationships and make it clear that one hospital group, one hospital, for example, one small country hospital could not go along on its own way of doing things, its own path of doing things, that it would be subject to some kind of review process, shall we say, about all of there would be some oversight over its management, over its clinical decision making, and so on. That was the theory. Of course, that has not happened. You're talking about women. You're talking about asylum seekers. Mm. You're talking about homelessness.
And we need to get to that point on this when you refer to, because there's also systemic racism in some of how people have been treated. There's been
exactly. So on the 29th of April, absolutely. On the 29th of April, on the concluding day of the inquest for Karen McAvoy, who died on Christmas Day in 2018, having given birth, a healthy young woman at 24 years of age, who was turned away on a number of occasions, having sought help for extreme pain after she'd given birth to her third baby. She died from sepsis, from multi-organ failure, from heart failure in the end, because it started with the sepsis, which was never detected in the times that she went back and begged for help. Okay? On the same day that inquest concluded with a verdict of medical misadventure, we received word in the Elephant Collective of a young woman, Tatenda Mukabwe, who died in Kerry University Hospital the previous week. Tatenda was a Zimbabwean asylum seeker. She had just been granted leave to remain. She had three children when she went to Kerry General to give birth to her fourth baby. She was working locally in a local care home in Kenmare. She was highly respected in the community. She had done a pre-nursing course. She wanted to go ahead and register as a mature student in nursing. And now she's dead, leaving four children behind her. Between 2007 and 2020, 2020, those deaths, up to Nayab Tariq's death in 2020 in Mayo General Hospital, there have been 13 inquests. All 13 have ended in medical misadventure. And I have to emphasize to you the importance of the fact that that is medical misadventure. It is not accidental death. It is not an open verdict. It is medical misadventure.
So you've pointed out that the medical misadventure verdicts cast doubt over the safety records of the maternity services. So, you know, you've pointed that out clearly in the work that you've done. Without fail, I know this is terrible to say, but without fail, all of the verdicts on all that, everything that was deemed investigation necessary to, came back with that verdict. Like, so you know, imagine but a 100% hit rate is,
yes,
something that everybody should be really upset about and worried about, because when we're talking,
where's Tatenda's name in this last week and a half of havoc over world-class maternity services, world-class hospital, world-class doctors? Where in the name of all of that was Tatenda's name even mentioned once in the dial, once in the shadowed, once by any of the public spokespeople? Was it mentioned even once? No.
Doctor, what about HICWA? Is HICWA supposed to somehow stop this from happening?
It's HICWA has produced two fantastic and incredibly good reports. It produced a 2013 report. Well, it's done three. Yeah, it's done several. It did one in 2013 on Savita's death. It did one in 2020. I'll just read you what the 2013 one pointed out in the 2020. Significantly under-resourced to cope with the current demands. Level of care was compromised by workload and the environment by which they were working. That was a 250-page 2013 HICWA report. The 2020 HICWA report, again, examined the onerous rosters and midwifery staff working overtime to maintain service levels. In the long term, should this situation continue in the absence of concerted intervention, such arrangements raise significant questions about sustainability and service safety. I think that HICWA has done, frankly, a remarkable job within very complex circumstances. In 2015, HICWA had carried out the report on the Portlaoise baby deaths, which again were deaths where parents were told these deaths were happened. So, you know, very sorry for your loss. It happened. But in fact, a great deal more happened than just it happened or it happens. And that report that HICWA produced on Portlaoise, HICWA found itself being confronted by a threat from the HSE in that instance to take it to court to prevent publication of its findings. Are you joking? Are you joking me to have one arm of the health services going to sue the independent surveillance arm of the health services? We had a similar situation over Malik Sawley's death in Hollow Street, where the Minister for Health, once the inquest had concluded, and again, that was a medical misadventure verdict, and I may point out, I'll come back to the failings on Malik Foley's death at a later point. A significant verdict, again, medical misadventure, significant failings of care, significant negligence of care. Hollow Street, National Maternity Hospital, so-called, went to the High Court indeed, to take a case against the Minister for Health for ordering HICWA to go in and review the practices in Hollow Street. And what the master at the time, who was Rona Mahoney, now well known to the Irish public, said was it would shake confidence, women's confidence in the health system would be shaken if these investigations were carried out. Really?
It is staggering that
are you bloody joking me?
No, that like when you say that out loud, and again, people, we're talking in broad terms. This is resulting in the deaths of women and children. This is what we're ultimately talking about. This level of control, because some of these investigations now, as actually your son brought to our attention, they want investigations into how we handle the release of investigations rather than actually the details. And like, I don't know, Martin, we read this doc, and I was just looking at the idea around, they haven't even, and Vicky Conway, who does the police podcast, has actually done an entire episode on the Coroner's Act and how it's, absolutely, you know, and it's just, yeah. But you are urging people, urging the state to say, look, We have the actual Coroner's Amendment 2019. Why aren't we actually implementing it? It just seems to me. So I'm after using a lot of jargon that listeners are probably annoyed about. If you want to explain what that means, it'd be great.
It's incredibly annoying to get through all this. You have, okay, we've got the 19 units. We have the Department of Health. We have the HSE. We have HICWA. We have a group of professional obstetric consultants who are feeling very, very under attack, I may say. Do you want me to read this from?
Yes, please do.
Delivering the Future, don't buy it. He doesn't deserve the royalties, I can tell you. This is quoting from Michael Turner, who was, quote, the National Director of HSA Clinical Program of Obstetrics and Gynecology from 2010 to 2019. The reason why the mastership system works so well is because we are competitive. The department We have 7 years to innovate and bring in changes. And our entire focus and drive is directed towards that for that period. It is exhausting, but it is what we sign up to do. The Department of Health and the HSE don't like the maternity hospital masterships because the masters go off and do things they haven't approved of, and they develop up new services, and they're innovative. And sometimes they might be a bit competitive, but that competition is healthy in my view. No one has ever confronted the obstetric cabal in this country.
Why not? Why not, Doc? Is it because of the patriarchy? Is it because the way hospitals have always historically, basically the hospitals in Ireland are run by consultants.
Martin.
If I come back to the question about consultants running hospitals.
It's a very lucrative position in this country. I can tell you this. It's roughly speaking, I'll find the correct figures here in a minute. Mary O'Connor did those in 2006. They haven't changed a lot since then. And it's very influenced by American private medicine and by the mores from the American medical system. More than a third of women are going to have their babies under private care in this country. And they do so because they argue, and they will be women, obviously, with means and able to pay. They will argue that they will get the best care then. This notion, I often think it's related to the sheer poverty of this country and the society over a very, very significant, long, long, long period of time. I've talked with older women who would say, I saved up to be able to go privately. And I think it's because going public had such shame attached to it, a kind of, you just weren't good enough if you went public. Whereas, as I say, if you go north of the border, you have a very adequately run public maternity service, largely staffed by midwives, and staffed by midwives who are not the underlings as they are in the system here in the Republic.
Like I know from my personal experience of the public system, there is, and I've seen both. I've seen the public and the private maternity health care.
Yes.
And there is a stigmatization, but actually the hospital played to it. They played to the stigmatization, which was, I found, incredibly offensive. And I actually made a complaint about it at the time.
Thank you. Thank you for making the complaint.
Oh, I'm terrible like that.
terrible in general.
I did make a complaint, and I wanted to speak to the master of the hospital, and I was told that we have both had to speak to the master of the hospital at the same time, that we couldn't speak to the master of the hospital individually. And I said, listen, we're not children. I said, I want to speak to the master with my wife, so please. Yeah, no, they wouldn't let us. They said we had to do it separately. And I said, there is no way, we're not children.
Can I just ask, in terms of the actual investigations and the fact that nothing is disclosed, nothing is made public? You know, it's well known everywhere that, you know, the only way to make steps to improve services and give things, transparency is one of the key things. It seems to me that there is a total lack of it, especially from the HSE and the state claims agency. And this is surrounding, let's not forget, I keep saying it, the medical misadventure deaths of pregnant people and children, by the way, unfortunately, really tragically, there have been children who have lost their lives in
Port Dunkin' hospital scandals, absolutely.
Yeah, what if we were to say to you, okay, Doc, here's a magic wand. Give us, you know, a few things you would go in and start waving it at immediately.
We have to see all of these sections of the Coroner's Act Amendment 2019 fully applied. And that means, in particular, Section 24. We need to ensure that a coroner actually takes advantage of what that law gives to his or her as a coroner, the chance to demand all documentation from the hospitals and to make all that documentation public. It is a struggle. If you look at it, and I've talked with a number of lawyers about this who have pursued cases of medical misadventure in respect of maternal deaths, they will tell you that the coroners are seeing the HSE bank of lawyers week after month after year. They don't all that frequently see the lawyers representing families in respect of maternal deaths. So coroners, in a sense, have, shall we say, a familiar relationship. I don't mean that in any wrong way at all, but they're familiar with the faces of the HSE legal team is what I mean. And they're familiar with how they speak. And when HSE legal teams, or when the teams from Hollow Street or the Rotunda or the Coombe go in and try to say, well, we're not actually going to submit to you, we're not going to submit as evidence, as publicly accountable evidence, as publicly transparent evidence, the internal investigations we have carried out about this particular tragic incident, coroners don't necessarily compel them to do so. We have to see that compatibility become part of the coroner's process. It was very much an aspect. There was a complete lack of transparency of documentation in respect of Marie Downey and her baby, Dara, who died in Cork University Maternity Hospital in March 2019. That particular instance was where Mary, who was epileptic, and who had given birth, it was by all accounts, according to the inquest, an exhausting labor, and would have had implications in respect of her epileptic care. Mary was then put into a single room on her own. She was breastfeeding her baby when she had an epileptic fit. She fell out of the bed, broke her neck, and she also. The resulting injury, she took her baby with her when she fell completely unconscious by that time. Of course, it was very rapid. And the baby also then died of his injuries. Now, there were huge problems around the state actually revealing the evidence, the HSE revealing the evidence about the internal investigation, what the internal investigation had come up with. It was not a properly conducted, I'm reading here from Darren O'Mahony, who was the junior barrister on that particular case for the Downey family. It was not a properly conducted, independent, impartial inquest with all information fully submitted to the public process, and therefore it did not fulfil the state's obligations under Article 2 of the ECHR and under the Coroner's Amendment Act 2019. We needed the staff, both at CUMH and the South Southwest Hospital Group, we needed the insight into how the system can be improved. And yet we didn't get those insights because that evidence was not made public and it was not permitted to be part of the coronial process.
And that information, again, back to what I was saying to you about if you could change things, that process in other jurisdictions, including the UK and their health service, is available to the public. It is available to be viewed. It is available. The investigations are disclosed, and we don't do that in our maternal death inquiry process.
No, we don't. Embrace, which has handled the UK, that's a what would you call that? It would be a recording and auditing body in the UK, which would handle all the evidence coming in about maternal deaths. And obviously, in a country as large as the UK, given the volume then of the numbers of maternal deaths, then you begin to get a pattern. For example, you get the pattern of deaths of women from ethnic minorities, which flags a very particular issue. I may say that out of our 13 inquests thus far, six of those women have been women of colour.
And that's a huge red flag as well.
You better believe it's a huge red flag. You better believe it. Absolutely. Now, Embrace has been able to work on that. We have only since 2007. Do you remember when you used to hear, or maybe you don't remember, but people like me remember, because we always remember this stuff, because we're really obsessive about it. Do you remember when they used to say, Ireland has the safest maternity service?
Oh, yes, I do. I do. I do actually remember. Yes, I do.
Well, it was terribly convenient because if you don't collect the numbers, then you can make those sorts of statements. We only began to collect the numbers in 2007. And it's a very interesting process in itself because when the maternal death inquiry was set up and perfectly legitimately down in Cork and the data has to be filed into them in Cork and so on, when there's a maternal death, and they were then going to submit it to as part of the Embrace, as the larger Embrace auditing process in the UK, that was very convenient. Do you know why that was very convenient?
Why?
because it would have been anonymized data.
You're talking to me about anonymized data. I love anonymized data.
Getting excited now.
So unless you knew, unless you were reading the final Embrace report, which is a triennial report, and you knew the specific circumstances of a maternal death, and I'm thinking of Bimbo Onanuga's death in the Rotunda in 2010, you would not know that it was in the Rotunda hospital that she had died. It took us 3 years to get the inquest for Bimbo Onanuga.
That is unreal.
It says a lot, doesn't it?
Oh, can I just ask? Okay, so Holles Street National Maternity Hospital. We are now in the middle of a battle to make sure that the National Maternity Hospital in Vincent's is on public owned land, so that hopefully we break some of the ties with the religious patriarchal system, which has so influenced reproductive health in Ireland. What do you feel about the situation, Jo?
Okay. Could I say, first of all, when I look at the, who I am calling very deliberately a cabal of elderly white men who've made a great deal of money, and I'll find those figures for you in a second, I promise you, from women's reproductive health in this country. I'd like to make an exception for one individual, Declan Keane, who is a former master of National Maternity Hospital, and who did his training in Oxford at a time when Oxford was very, when the maternity services in Oxford under the NHS were very influenced by an absolute giant of the childbirth world, a woman named Sheila Kitzinger. He came back and very quietly set up a wonderful hospital home birth referral service going through Holles Street. And it worked. It worked quietly and it worked well. And he never sought the plaudits for it. And I think he's an absolute exception. I could also add that there are a number of younger women consultant obstetricians coming up who I don't think are really best pleased with the cabal who are still in place. And we can see that in the recent row over the appointment of the master of the Rotunda Hospital, where Sean Daly, who had been formerly master of the Coombe University Women and Infants Hospital, was moved himself to the Rotunda Hospital. And Fergal Malone, who is the current master, I think he's gone now. I think his term has come to an end now in the last month or so, backed Sean Daly to apply for master of the Rotunda Hospital. There were two absolutely outstanding women candidates on that list. When Gabriel Scally was informed, when Gabriel Scally spoke out about this 6-8 weeks ago before the National Maternity Hospital row broke out, Gabriel Scally, who obviously came from Northern Ireland, has that sense of independence, has that sense of greater equality, has that sense of medicine being a social, a part of the social domain which will build better health for everybody, has that sense of deep equality. Because that's what he did for us over the cervical cancer reporting, said that he was scandalized that the patriarchy could still operate in the way it was, that in the end, Sean Daly, who is a business partner of Fergal Malone's in a privately run fertility clinic, got the job. It's not good. It's rubbish. This is 2022. This is absolutely outrageous.
But that's the patriarchy you were talking about at the beginning.
But that is the patriarchy. Now, if you just want the National Maternity Hospital, yeah. Peter Boylan, the darling of people who don't know so well how our system is running. Peter co-authored the third edition of Active Management of Labour, which is a very core text, not alone on which Holles Street ran, but it's really popular in the United States because it helped plan management of labor with oxytocin augmentation to accelerate labor. And they were able to do this over the first edition of Active Management of Labor, 25,000 first-time mothers of a population of 65,000 first-time mothers were subjected to oxytocin augmentation. They had patterns, they had partograms, they had it all down and so on. If you go through that edition, which is Young Peter's edition, you come to this paragraph. Every adult woman must, in the final analysis, be made to feel the proper custodian of her personal well-being, not to mention that of her child. Labour is no exception to this general rule. An expectant mother owes it to herself, her husband, and her child, and every other woman sharing the facilities of the same delivery unit, to be well briefed on the mother's contribution to labour. The disruptive effect of one disorganized and frightened woman in a delivery unit extends far beyond her individual comfort and safety, and there should be no hesitation in telling her so. Well, there's the patriarchy at work for you.
Are we saying slap across the face, cop yourself on, woman?
This is like when you read that out loud, and I know you put the intonations on it, but my God.
Oh no, they would put the intonations on it. Women have been spoken to that way.
That's fair.
Midwives can tell you that they have heard women being spoken to that way.
I've seen people say things like that in a hospital. I'm not disputing it.
I'm just saying to hear it so eloquently put. And then you know that this is, you know, it's like there is obviously a rally tomorrow to make the National Maternity Hospital publicly owned and publicly built and publicly funded. But to know that the actual power brokers behind the scenes, you know, it's one of those things.
A great deal of money from it, both sides on. Both people like Ronan Mahoney on the one hand and Peter Boylan on the other. When Peter Boylan was master, he was master during the X case. Was young Peter out marching then? My son was. My students were. I was busy writing like fury, along with many other feminists at the time, saying, what in God's name can you say about this thing called the X case? How dare you? Was Peter out marching? Did Peter make a statement? No. Did the three masters try to cover their tracks when they went to the Department of Justice and the Minister for Justice in 2003, asking for a referendum or asking for something to stop the flow? To stop the flow of immigrant women coming into Ireland because our maternity services could not cope. Do you know that that's the basis for the 2004 referendum?
No, I did not know that.
Well, yeah.
So basically the referendum
in 2004,
which was the most, Tony, as you say yourself quite a lot, one of the most racist things that ever happened in this country, without a doubt.
No. I'm talking about the 2004 referendum, Martin, the one which took away the clause from the 1998 Good Friday Agreement, which said that everybody born on the island of Ireland is a citizen. That was overturned and qualified in 2004 because the masters of the Dublin maternity hospitals sought those kinds of changes because they didn't want their maternity services, shall we say, overrun.
What was the phrase that was used, Tony?
Anchor babies.
Anchor babies was the phrase that was used most of the time.
That's explosive stuff. It really is.
It isn't there. I mean,
I get that, but it's always the case with these. We talk to people. These things are documented and in plain sight, but we looked away.
It's referenced. It is in plain sight. Martina Heinen, who's one of the Elephant Collective members, has written a great deal of this on In Plain Sight. I've written up all of this. All this stuff has been documented in the final chapter of the Sally Gardens book because I had to get it out there in one piece because it's been so. Look, I have worked for many years with women who want to train as midwives, to be there with women, to be there with best evidence, to be there with best care, to be there with continuity of care. It is not possible in this country. It has not been made possible because of the power groups that operate in the ways that they have operated and the patriarchy, which has operated in that way. Young Peter, as born again feminist, he published a book, In the Shadow of the Eighth, My 8 Years Working for Women's Health in Ireland. Really? As I say, where the hell were you, Peter, during the X case? I wonder, when the rest of us were so concerned about X and being taken into the sexual assault treatment unit in the Rotunda. And I have to there say that George Henry, who did set up the sexual assault, who gave leave to set up the sexual assault treatment unit, was Moira Woods who set it up. Did a fine job. Every so often, there are breaks in this story, but there are too few breaks, and there's too few conscientious efforts. I'm thinking of the fact that Gabriel Scully has come down from the north and done the cervical cancer. I'm thinking of Pat Kinder, who's also come down from the north. And when, again, a decree from the top, driven by insurance companies in the United States to close down the maternity units in Monaghan and Dundalk hospitals in 2001 and 2002, leaving those areas with no maternity services and no maternity cover whatsoever. And locals objected, and look, many of us were involved in those objections, writing up those objections, researching them and talking with councillors and all the rest of it. It was Pat Kinder, a very fine civil servant, absolutely steeped in the culture of good health administration in the Northern Ireland machinery, who came down and helped us sort that out and try to get a different kind of configuration of maternity services underway, which a configuration, I may say, which was heavily resisted by that same cabal. And always and everywhere, they will say the same thing. There is no safety in what we are saying. There is no, which is not true. We could, yeah. We have all the documentation around safety, I can tell you. But again and again, what you do see is private practice being encroached upon. If you, for example, look at Karen McAvoy's death, one of the things they said in the inquest, in Karen's inquest, was that the triage room in the Coombe Hospital was the size of a broom cupboard. This is broom cupboard medicine. Karen went in there as a public patient. There was no way that Karen, this is part of the inquest proceedings, there was no way that Karen was actually properly examined. Her proper observations taken and so on, none of that was done. It was clipboard medicine. It was, oh, there are a lot of people out there in that broom cupboard. Look, just go around and ask them what they think is ailing them. Ah, sure, it's probably sciatica. Tell her to go to Tallaght General Hospital. Are you joking me? Are you absolutely joking me? A woman died 7 days later. A woman. She's
Anna, dead. Are we focusing singularly on the? I don't mean the wrong thing, but the wrong focus for the new proposed maternity hospital on the ownership of the land. Is there more? Of course, from talking to you, there's more important stuff to focus on.
Yeah, Martin, I wouldn't say necessarily more important. I think that the getting the religious thing right is incredibly important. But I'm going to put this to you about the National Maternity Hospital, and I just need to find those quotes. Joe, would you ever look at your papers properly? Jesus, God, what are you like? At least I've come across this. I'm sorry, I just really apologize for this. The large-scale private obstetric practice in the 19 public-funded hospitals and unit. And there is no question, but the large-scale private obstetric practices is a feature within the proposed National Maternity Hospital site in St. Vincent's. It is accommodated alongside obstetric contracts, public practice in the same hospitals. In 19, Mary O'Connor analyzed the high income earning potential in 2006 that accrues to the 100 or so consultant obstetricians working this dual public-private mix. She estimates that the private care obstetric market is worth some 49 million annually.
Wow.
That's all.
49 million annually.
With Dublin obstetric consultants able to command fees, command total wages, really up to about $500,000 a year. While outside Dublin consultants can manage maybe about 50,000.
And earlier you told us that the UK equivalent was what, about 100,000?
180,000.
Okay, and we put that on a par, and I hate to bring it down to boil it down to that, but that's the reality of this. As Martin, love to shout all the time, QE bono.
Yeah, know? That's it. Who benefits?
Okay, who benefits exactly? So if you look at the National Maternity Hospital, first of all, why the St. Vincent site, or is that just their sense of status? Why did they not go? If you're talking about, and I'll come back to the nomenclature in a second, but if you're talking about a maternity hospital with specialisms, which may be incredibly important to save the life of a woman or a baby who has to be airlifted or brought up by ambulance from down the country, whatever it is, you might think that being at the end of the motorway network might be a kind of convenient place to be. Would that be TALA? Now, why wouldn't that work? Because it's an HSE hospital, and there is no way that these Dublin maternity hospitals want to go in with an HSE hospital because they don't want, quote, their autonomy, unquote, taken away. They give no autonomy to midwives. They sure as hell give no autonomy to women except to make the decision to go public or private. That's your limitations on your autonomy there. But they want their autonomy and they want that private practice. So you might wonder about, you also might wonder about.
Well, was there not a, was I got, people gave out to me on social media because there was a, I thought it was a kind of classist, and I won't name the person involved because I respect the clinicians doing their work, but I think it was a it showed a level of privilege where they said in this maternity hospital, whether you were from the flats or from a castle, you'll be given the same treatment. And, you know, I just thought, you know, as someone who...
Except you won't. So you will have a woman in a private room in a Dublin maternity hospital complaining to a midwife, why did my tea not come in a silver teapot? Do you think I'm quoting from an actual example? I am. Whereas the woman in the public ward will be saying to a midwife, I'm really frightened for my baby. I'm really frightened for my life. My partner is so involved. He's so caught up in the drugs thing. We're homeless. I don't know how we're going to get out of it. We need to move down the country to where we're safe. I don't know how to do that. We're homeless. Try that one on. Try that one on.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I mean, I can't fathom, first of all, why it was Vincent's.
It's just been explained to us, Martin. So,
but it is status.
There's no question but it is status. Do you think for one second the demographics of Dublin 4, even in terms of who is having babies, in any way matches the demographics of Southwest Dublin?
Of Dublin 24.
Yeah. Yeah. No. You're absolutely dead right on that. And a lot of it, too, is consultants don't want to go to the beyond Dublin 4. They don't want to go beyond their little enclave that they've had for years.
Are we being really unfair to many consultants doing good work?
I've stated where I think that there are some very fine women obstetric consultants who I think must be pretty cross at this point with that cabal of those aged white men, and probably want them to get off the scene, and don't we all? And I've stated some of the fine actions, and I've stated Declan Keane and George Henry. George Henry in respect to the sexual assault treatment unit in the Rotunda, and Declan Keane in respect to the hospital home birth scheme in Holler Street. So, and yes, the difficulty is that when you look further into several points here. Can I just finish off the wretched National Maternity Hospital? We do not have a National Maternity Hospital, okay? I just want to make this very clear. In 1894, when the wretched hospital set itself up, the founding members gave that title to themselves. They were a private group of private doctors. And this is exactly what they said. Since the city already had the new National Maternity Hospital officially opened its doors on the 17th of March, 1894, the chairman hit a popular theme, this is a report in the Irish Times, when he declared that, quote, the importance of such an institution could not be exaggerated, and it was for them to see that it was managed for their own Catholic people under Catholic management, wholly and solely. Okay? So good luck with that story about the National Maternity Hospital. Good luck with that story.
That's interesting, isn't it?
More interesting.
That is interesting. And the ethos of the National Maternity Hospital as it exists is a Catholic ethos. There is no doubt about it. It is a Catholic ethos.
Good luck trying to sort out that mess.
Last question for me on this, and we will come back to this topic now because there's so much that you've actually said that I want to investigate further.
Two more things I'll have to point. I'm going to beg you for two more points.
Please go ahead. Go. Absolutely. This is your show.
Wait, can I put in two points now?
Yep.
Thank you so much. If you look at the detail out of the 13 inquests, one of the consistently disturbing aspects is the lack of supervision of junior and senior registrars. We're stretched very thin in this country. Junior and senior registrars really struggle to do their work and their training. We would certainly see where I can think of two inquests where registrars, well, I can think of three inquests straight off, where registrars were left with unaccountable and very difficult and very painful situations without full consultant cover. That 180,000 NHS wage that I mentioned to you, that comes out of a recent paper where a hospital in the north of England, quite a large hospital, and they often don't come as large as our maternity hospitals here in Dublin, with say 8,000 to 10,000 births per annum. This particular one does, set up to see how they could structure it to get consultant cover for 24-hour consultant cover for their hospital. The total sum for that cost, £778,000, and that was for five consultant obstetricians. We don't have that kind of commitment in this country. Okay, that's the first point. So there are problems around how the investigations are done. They should all be done by HICWA. Oh, God, I forgot to mention that. Three points, sorry, begging you.
Go. We're just enjoying this as and in a dark way, unfortunately, people.
Please. In a dark way.
Yeah.
Okay. In the mid-1990s, this country, flying high at that point in its Celtic Tiger times, decided to carry out a study on women's health, okay? And in fairness, that work went through every single small community across the country. Women across this country were invited to gather together and say, what do we need for women's health, okay? That was gathered together in something called a plan for women's health, okay? And there was then set up something called the Women's Health Council at the beginning of the 2000s, around the same time that the Crisis Pregnancy Agency was set up as well, which did enormous and formidable work in actually saying, this is what women need, this is what women are experiencing, this is what we need to answer for in terms of crisis pregnancy. Both those agencies were discontinued, Combat Poverty Agency following just before it, in 2008, 2010 cutbacks. Those are not agencies this country likes. Those are not agencies these hierarchies like. They don't like independent agencies out there doing their work. The latest iteration, however, is that Stephen Donnelly has put together a new plan for women's health, except unlike the 1990s one, he hasn't actually gone out and asked the women in the country what they need or want. No. This is all top-down. Are you joking me? All top-down hierarchical stuff in bloody 2022? Can they not recite words around equality? And it does mean that the investigation unit, which has now been set up to investigate serious incidents within our maternity units, is part of that top-down structure within the HSE. It should not be there. It should be part of HICWA. They don't want it to be part of HICWA. Okay, that's point one. Second point is around our midwives. We are hemorrhaging midwives out of our services. I can tell you that they are. I can tell you because I've been involved in their training for, a long time. A very, very long time. I've been involved with colleagues who've worked their socks off to ensure that we get midwives of greatest integrity, ethics, and absolutely the best and finest of training. And they are leaving the services as fast as they can because they can't carry the problems any longer. It was some of those student midwives, because they were students at the time, who came back in to me at the time of Bimbo Onanuga's death and said, this has happened. What can we do? And I said, right, we'll do something. And that was the beginning of the Elephant Collective. We need a very different and a very much more radical take. And let me tell you, if one more woman TD who probably went privately to give birth once, if they want a conversation about maternity services, they might come and talk with the midwives. They might come and talk with the Elephant Collective. They might forget their silver teapot notions.
Doc, that's just I can say Tony and I are pretty, like, we're just sitting here going, wow, just wow.
And I know, it's
I'm
taken.
Sorry, I'm
not
so,
at all.
Please,
I can.
We didn't know this, Tom. No. We didn't know this, and what you're telling us is new to us. We didn't know any of this.
And I have to say, please, listeners, share, tell people. And there are links, by the way, to the Elephant Collective on this podcast. There's actually a letter that they're calling on the government to make changes in terms of transparency around those. You can get involved in that as well. I mean, how could you not? How could you not? I mean, you've just heard the facts laid out emotively and passionately and absolutely
professionally, Tony.
Yes. Absolutely. Doc, have you one more point you want to make before we?
Okay, we've had nothing that has changed. 13 cases which have either reached an inquest or public high court hearing. The medical the legal expenses paid out for between 2007 and 2015. The HSE paid out $282 million in damages for maternity cases. My midwives could have done with having a working maternity service. They don't want to see women severely injured. They surely don't want to see families dealing with maternal death. These deaths are happening, and they're radically different, these maternal deaths, from maternal deaths in poor world countries where women develop life-threatening complications because they can't reach hospitals. These deaths are happening in hospitals. 4 deaths center on sepsis in some form as a principal factor. We have had sepsis guidelines since Tanya McCabe's tragic death in 2007. Have they been followed? No. When did we find that out? When HCWA carried out its report on Savita's death in 2013. 3 of deaths have been from preeclampsia HELLP syndrome, which is a serious condition that affects specifically pregnant women. 3 deaths resulting from catastrophic blood loss, internal bleeding. 2 were from postpartum hemorrhages, which were poorly identified and never adequately responded to. 1 is a catastrophic seizure with neglected care for epilepsy following birth and what was described as a mild postpartum hemorrhage. These are definable factors which would not... These are deaths taking place in a rich country, in a rich world country. Why is this happening? Why are our conditions so complete? Why? What can I say about it? Our services are completely understaffed and under-resourced at the baseline level. They do not run adequately on evidence. They are a scandal. They are a scandal to the women of this country. They are just an absolute scandal. And that is before you get to all the other issues of reproductive health care, which form part of that definition of reproductive justice. What the hell do we think we are doing?
Dr. Jo Murphy-Lawless, this has been, and I won't say a pleasure, but it has been very, it's not a pleasure to hear these things. We are shocked. And I can say that without a doubt. Tony and I are shocked. Thank you so much for, firstly, the Elephant Collective. And then thank you for coming on here and explaining to us the absolute abysmal situation of maternity services in Ireland. Oh, we really appreciate it. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you both so much. Thank you for your patience. I'm so sorry.
Don't ever apologize, because Martin said shocked. I'm staggered. It's been a privilege to hear you talk so well about the situation that you care so deeply about. And now I hope many other people will care a lot more about having listened to this.
Could I just say one more thing?
Please.
In the Yonkula baby deaths, we know for certainty, and it was Aoife Hegarty, RTE, every so often it gets out. One of the families of 2 of the babies who died in the Port Yonkula hospital scandal finally requested FOI and got the emails, all the emails with their names in it. And they found out from there that doctors involved who were part of the investigation into the baby's deaths were seeking backdoor support and direction from the state claims agency, which was not open to the families. Are you joking me around transparency? Are you bloody joking me?
No.
And I can send you the link to that report is still up on RTE's website from Aoife Hegarty. And well done, Aoife, for getting to the bottom of it in one of her investigative journalistic efforts. Well done, Aoife.
Joe, we will certainly be coming back to you. I mean, I have no doubt we will be coming back to you.
But you don't want to come back, honestly.
We do. We do. Yeah. And thank you so much for this. Tony, I know you appreciate it too, but thank you so much.
Now, listen, folks, again, I know it's a digression, but I spoke with a lady yesterday. I've been speaking to people throughout the week, as you know, but after the events of the death of Shireen in East Jerusalem, I spoke to someone who knew her, and obviously we didn't want to put a podcast up because I thought it would be quite inappropriate to prey on someone's grief, but we are going to have a conversation tomorrow on that. So I'll bring it to you as soon as I can, and hopefully it'll be I think there's a little bit of distance of time, but we need to talk about what's happening, continues to happen in Palestine and Gaza and the West Bank and that area. So I know it's a digression. Thanks for support. We really appreciate it. Do let people know, and for God's sake, check out the Elephant Collective and support it there. Thank you so much, Dr. Joe Murphy Lawless. It's been a privilege, and it has been a privilege. Talk to you soon, folks.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.